church real five. So I'm in a way I'm surprised that being so short of decent food or not having decent food, you talked about it. That would have, I would have thought that would have made it worse agony. Did it help?
Oh, it helped because it gave you an appetite. You were thinking about succulent roast beefs and different things, and it made you hungry. Even though you were probably hungry before, but you, when whatever it was came, food-wise, you had your fill.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Did some people get very depressed? You talked about people stopping eating.
Oh, yeah, yes. I mean, there was several people would sit around, walk around, and if you see him sat there too long, somebody would come tap to him. And buck him up, you know. Fortunately, it didn't happen too often, but it did occasionally. But the most funny, if you want to call it funny, to see two certain people walking through the camp. You knew somebody was going to have a tooth extracted. Yeah. One would be carrying the pliers, and one would do the knockout. Don't say you've got a toothache, for God's sake. What tooth is it playing you up, Dad? Wherever the tooth was. It would go around to these two particular people. One was a medical orderly. And one was a big man. And he'd go along, and of course, the knockout was nothing. You just punch on the chin, you were gone. But while you were gone, the tooth was extracted.
And it
worked. It worked. Circumcisions, believe it or not.
Why?
Done to various people in the camp, men.
Why did they suddenly need
it? I don't know. This is the most stupidest thing. As I said, there was this lady doctor come whatever up in the temple, and circumcision was done about three or four times. I couldn't believe it, you know.
And this was done by the doctor.
Yeah. And she treated ones that were obviously trying to fight for life, trying to bring them back, but attending to the wounds not too long after the battle, after we arrived in the camp. She would do her best, but as one chappy came up or came back from her, he said she's doing her best, but she got nothing. Mm-hmm. So that was it. But the morale was quite good, really, because I think what we tried to prove was that they wouldn't get us down. Don't matter what they said and did. Yeah.
Did you get depressed?
No.
No.
No. The only thing that used to worry you was night blindness. Yeah, because of the lack of deficiency of vitamins, it was a joke to see three or four men holding hands going to the top.
Mm.
Yeah, because they couldn't see where they were going. Only, it wouldn't last very long. But it would be a thing to see three or four men walking along holding hands.
That was literally because this would come upon you.
Yeah, come upon
you.
No.
Right. And they could see during the day.
Oh, yeah. No, you couldn't. No.
Mm.
And then, unfortunately, marijuana was found growing in the hills.
Yes.
And
so
one
particular.
I don't know. I couldn't even. Not even I looked at it, but. You used to walk around the camp, and there's a little bit noisy coming out of one of the cookhouses, and you think to yourself, "What they're preparing?" But it got to be that was a smokehouse. Yeah, they go in and get high on the marijuana. Yes, I did it once. I did it once. They said, "Go on, get happy." I said, "Get happy." Oh, yeah, all right, and I did. I drew her, but I convinced myself I wanted to go to sleep.
Mm.
And I couldn't get into bed quick enough. And that was one and only time. Yeah.
Did that go on for a while?
Oh, it went on for quite a long while. I mean, you had the addicts there that would.
Really?
Yeah, they'd be under the influence every day. Mm. Yeah. Because if they'd be strong enough to go on with detail, or if they somebody else found them on one, they'd bring it back in.
Did the Chinese know about this?
I think they did, but I think they closed a blind eye to it. Yeah.
Did they use drugs?
I think they smoked something, yes. Yes, they smoke something. Because we used to get a tobacco issue and a sugar issue. No, no Red Cross. No, they wouldn't. They said that the commandant said that they didn't believe in the Red Cross, and they wanted to prove to the world that the Chinese could care for prisoners of war themselves. So we used to get a packet of raw tobacco and an issue of sugar. Not much, no. No soap, no shaving cream. Homemade razors were made. And you went sat in a barbecue and got it all cut off if you wanted to. Yeah.
How did you make a homemade
metal found in the hills. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they came back from the hills and somebody spotted some metal around with a water stone in that, ground it down to a rate and cut very well. But take the beer off and leave half your skin behind as well, you know. Every time you got a growth, you went down and sat in a barbershop. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to have medical treatment?
Yes. I thought it, because of my butchery trade, I was offered a job of killing wild pigs. But the wild pigs laid, had their pen in the ground, 3 foot in the ground. Once the pig was killed, it was blown up by mouth from the foot to expand it so it could scrape it, get all the hairs off it.
Explain that again, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Once the it was living in a pit.
Yeah, they would bring these wild pigs and put them in a pit, right. Mm-hmm. Until one was required for butchery.
Yeah.
Then they'd lasso it and bring it out the pit. Mm-hmm. And the man nicknamed Piggy, which is a little short, stocky Chinese man, he was as strong as an axe. He would kill the pig. Okay. And then he'd blow it up by mouth. Yeah, they put a rod up in the side of the, from the ankle, blow it up, and then he'd stand there physically and blow this pig up so it would come big and tense, and then they would put it in boiling water to scrape the hairs off. And I happened to walk past this, because I was helping out, I happened to walk in, and they chucked the pig and it splashed over me. But would you believe it? That left right leg's got no scars. Boiling water. But that was the only accident I ever had.
Did you get any treatment?
Oh yes, they put something on it and wrapped it in a homemade bandage. And when they took the bandage off, there was no scars, no whatsoever, which I was very surprised at. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you ever go and see the Chinese lady doctor?
No, I had no cause to. Mm-hmm. No, even though I suffered blood, diarrhea was an everyday thing, you know, but no. I never became that ill to go up to the temple, no. Yeah.
As you stayed in the camp, did you increasingly hate the Chinese, or did you increasingly...
Became more friendly with them.
Yeah.
You look at young people, like we were. I mean, there was no Chinese. There was no old people there. I think Piggy, or... the camp commandant was probably the oldest Chinese. And... as you live with them, although they were the enemy, you got to sort of think of them as not the enemy in the end. And every night they came round to your door of your hut, opened the door and said, "How many men?" And you'd have to answer them. Eight men, two men, WC. And we, but before we went, there'd be a pack of the Chinese rough cigarettes chucked in.
Yeah.
They were probably suffering much the same as you were, weren't they? Oh, yes, I mean, you see, I think because they had their problems as well regarded health and things, they couldn't go on like... I mean, we went on because we were fit. But the only time you ever saw them is when they were on guard, studying, and resting. Going to sleep. That's the only time I ever saw them. You didn't see them doing any physical exercises or nothing like that. And they'd be running everywhere. The only thing we had to do is when the Chinese came into the pit, you had to stand up and bow. But that stopped after a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't bother him after a bit.
Were there any educational activities in the camp?
Oh, yes. Yeah. They brought a travelling theatre into the camp of Chinese people, girls, with an opera that was very, very communistic. It was called The White-Haired Girl. And it depicted life in China coming through the ages of today. And that went on for about 4 or 5 hours.
What did you think of that?
Rubbish. I didn't bother. I didn't even clap or nothing. I just got to walk out. Educational-wise was the daily reading of the Red Book, which they would ask you questions on. And you used to blunder your way through an answer. But educational, that was about it. But
did any of the prisoners arrange any sort of educational things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had different quizzes and things. And, we had sports. They allowed us to play football on the playground. And I don't know whether you've heard recently about the Camp Olympics. That was a thing that happened. We had several people from our camp when we did an internal. It was sport mainly, and then they picked the best out and put them into the Camp Olympics for propaganda purposes. Yeah. But educationally, get papers to read, communistic papers in English. Should roll them up, make fags out of them. Yeah.
Did you think you were going to get immigrated, or you were going to get out?
Well, this particular time when the Chinese interpreter came round and said, "We're going for a good, very good lecture today." We said, rubbish. No, today, good lecture. Rubbish. No good lecture, me river. We could chuck him in the river. Anyway, go to the camp. And they rattled on and rattled on for hours and hours about the goodness of the Chinese People Republic. And in the end, they simply said that there are peace negotiations going on. And how long was that before that? A year? 18 months? Yeah, so anyway, he came round and he said, "Good lecture, wasn't it?" We said, "Yeah," we picked him up and still chucked him in the river. Chinese guards raised their rifles because we were running to the river with him on high. And he shouted something to them, so they just put their rifles down and he went in. Into the swimming pool. Get it. Mm. I've got a photograph up there taken by him.
Really?
Yeah.
You met him again?
No. He went missing in the camp.
And this was a Chinese
interpreter. Yeah, he was the camp interpreter. I can't, unfortunately, but he was educated in either Oxford or Cambridge. Very well spoken English. And he came round, and there was a group of us stood around on Top Road. He said, "Just a gentleman." He said, "I'd like to take your picture." "Ah, push off, you're taking our picture." No, serious. "I've been on leave," he said, "and I bought myself a camera." He said, "and I would like to take a picture. No propaganda, I promise you." He says, "You have negative and photograph." How many years later? Within the last 8 years, Tony Eagle says to me, who lives in Gloucester, he was prisoner of war, "I've got a photograph of you in the camp." I said, "This is silly, you haven't got a photograph." He said, "I've got a photograph of you in the camp." I said, "Never had a photograph took in the camp." "Oh yes you did," he said. And the original photograph's up there, of the six of us upon Top Road.
And how did it
Tony Eagle's got it, but how he got it, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. So I've had it enlarged.
Yeah.
And you can see the background of the valley. But, so that was it.
So that interpreter was really quite a good influence.
Yes, he was. He'd come and talk to you, and we didn't look at, I personally didn't look at him as a Chinese guard or anything. But towards the end, of the 2.5 years, they were people. They were just ordinary people. You know, it's a funny thing to describe, and probably people say, "Oh, you can't get like that." But the animosity had sort of died and things had gone, yes.
How do you feel about the Chinese now?
Actually, I don't mind. I accept them, but I run cold when they start talking.
Really?
Yeah. I don't eat Chinese food. I won't eat rice in any shape or form. Rice Krispies? Nope. Rice? Nope. It's cooked rice is when the rice pudding comes out when I'm not here. Yeah.
Going back a bit, I imagine, you said you've got to mention dispatching.
Yes. It happened during the battle. Oh. Yes. Oh. And that's all I'm going to say.
Right.
Yes.
It'll be on record.
If you can look it up, you know, well, then you'll find out.
Were you surprised when?
I didn't even get it till I came home. I've been home a few months, and this letter arrived, and I didn't read anything into it. But my father said, "What did you do then?" I said, "Well." And he said, "You were mentioning the dispatches." I said, "Oh, nothing." No. And I didn't tell nobody. No.
But you know why you dropped it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it still happening now.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you not tell us?
No, I'm very sorry, no.
Mm-hmm. Is that because you feel a sense of modesty?
Yes. I mean, to me at the time, I was following instructions. I was told to do something, and I did it. Mm-hmm. Didn't think about it. Just did it, and something happened, and it stopped something happening. I think that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It's not in the book.
Is it not the little one?
Were you looking at the Imjum roll?
Yes.
The yellow one or the new
yeah,
one?
The yellow one.
All is in there is BCW 229-8601 MID. Mm-hmm. Well, then, sort of every other day they would force in marches up to the parade ground, and again a load of talking, and then saying, in the end, the peace negotiations are going wrong because the Americans are doing this, the Americans are doing that, and they're just that and the other. And oh, yeah, same old story, back home again, back down to the hut. Yeah. Yep.
And that went on
for quite a long time. In fact, in the end, we got it to take as an everyday thing. Although the negotiations were going on daily, as we all know, we just probably tended to forget about it because it had dragged on so long.
Yes, and I suppose it would bring its own tension if you thought there was an end in sight. It makes it worse in a sense.
Well, when the when they called us on to the parade ground and said that they'd settled the armistice and that you would be going home. You thought tomorrow, next week, the week after next, or the week after next. It just didn't happen.
Mm. And how long was it then?
Oh, some 3 to 4 or 5 weeks before they even decided to say, right, you're on truck number 3 going down to Freedom Village, which they didn't do. Down to Freedom Village, because in the beginning, when they started, the camp became started to become deserted because obviously they were taking so many away, and they did it alphabetically.
Mm-hmm.
So W's hit the back of the queue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you feel when the people started to go? I mean, in a sense, it's breaking up the camp.
Yes, and you became very agitated because, when am I going home? You know. When is it my turn? And when they were going through the alphabet, they look at yourself and you go, oh, yeah, which church, when's the W coming? Which eventually did, of course, it did come.
And what was it like towards the end of your time in the camp when a lot of people had gone?
Well, that was it. You were wandering around aimlessly like a ghost town. I mean, all your friends that were above you in the alphabet, of course, had gone. And you were just basically saying to the fewer that were left, or well, that's getting the C's, the D's, the J's, the W's are coming up next week. but when? You know, and you just anticipated that you would come, eventually you would go, yeah.
So eventually you were told you were going
today? Yes, yeah. Yes, it took us...
You went on a truck?
A truck, driven...
What sort of a truck was that?
Driven by steam. Mm. Yeah, great big Bunsen burner on the back, creating steam to drive the steam engine.
All of it.
That was the state of the art with the Koreans and the North Koreans. Yeah, mm-hmm. The petrol thing. That one in those days. There wasn't that type of thing. It was combustion engines. So we arrived at their handover point, which was a beautiful village, immaculate, and that was the holding. Again, we met up with the friends that already come out. Because alphabetically, they were being taken down to Freedom Village. So again, in the queue, I didn't go back through the alphabet till it came to 3 days. I was in the holding camp, getting more and more het up, worked up. When am I gonna go? Yeah. Eventually, we came down into Freedom Village by army trucks, actual trucks, and. We got out on the enemy, let's say the enemy side, North Korea, out of the truck, down to another, into another truck, and then brought down to the bridge of no return. The bridge of no return is you decided to go or stay, up to you. But once you got across the bridge, because it's only a little short bridge, if you decided you didn't want to go, by the time you come back, you were dead. You were shot. Yeah, because you changed your mind. It didn't happen. Not with our crowd. And when we got down there, there were all the Americans all in their dress uniforms, silk gloves, silk scarf, neckerchiefs, trying to help us out of the forest. We told them what to do. No one. Strong and as fit as a lion. No ounce of fat on me. I've been working, I was bronzed. 6 to 8 pounds when I stepped on the scale. I was probably fitting what any other one. And they attempted to sort of say, you know, you've been a prisoner of war, come on, let's help you out the trucks. We told them in no uncertain manner where to go. And they were amazed. They were amazed, yeah. Right, strip off where you are, which we were in beautiful cotton suits. Blue cotton suits that the Chinese had given us. Yeah, we've looked after these people, you know, you communists we know, but we've looked after, took them in, chucked them straight in the fire, walked through a big tent which had overhead showers going. Showers broke down. Hang on there, chaps, Americans. Buckets of hot water, or warm water thrown at you. Out the other side, dried down, deloused, powdered, top to head, crooks and crannies. Never been in so embarrassed in my life. Into another tent, another shower, which was working. Come out the other end and pick whatever you want to wear, clothes wise, army wise. You know.
What did you pick?
Straight battle dress, yeah. In the truck, down to Freedom Village. A beautiful place. It wasn't the run-of-the-mill Korean. It was brick and mortar and stones and gateways and pathways. Yeah. And I'm walking through the gate, and a lady's coming towards me, nurse in uniform. Hello, Ben. She said, your name's Ben Whitchurch. She said, your mother described you to the T. She said, there's a letter for you. Yeah, it was a letter from my mother. Yeah.
And she recognised
it? Yeah, she recognised it. She didn't know, she only knew it from description. I mean, she had no photograph, because I had no photograph. She said, her name's Ben Richards. Obviously, she was waiting for the W's to come through, so there weren't too many of us, you know, so. Then it was from there into another great big hall, packed with anything and everything. Cigarettes, lighters, watches, wallets, pipes, tobacco. anything you wanted, you could take.
Really?
Mm.
That's strange.
Yeah, you could take anything you wanted off the tables. Yeah. With the British Red Cross there as well, Mike.
Yeah.
Mm.
What did you feel? It must have,
I was amazed. I mean, I don't think I took anything. Mm-hmm. I was shell-bound, shocked and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing was into the canteen. What do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? Yeah. Right, I'll have roast beef. I'll have roast potatoes and gravy and vegetables. I looked at it and I thought, I said, sorry, I can't eat that. You're not hungry, buddy? I said, yeah, but I can't eat that. I said, I'll try. I might have nibbled at something. I didn't have it. Oh, I didn't eat it. No.
What was stopping you?
Looking at it, it was food. And you haven't seen this for food for 2.5 years. You were looking for your bowl of rice, you know. And even coming back home on the boat, this particular chap still had to eat Chinese food because he couldn't come to European food. Well, eventually he turned over. Said, there's a film show on tonight. Open air film show. Cartoons. Right, go down and have a look at it. He went around and he was looking around for the Chinese cars, you know. He was still all uptight. Sat down on the floor watching this film. Came along with crates of beer. Do you want a beer? Yeah, I'll have one. I got drunk on a pint. My beer, I was flopping around. Yeah, crazy. Crazy. Relieved, I think, would probably be the best way to describe it, to think, where are the Chinese guards? They're not here. You haven't got to do this. You haven't going to go up the hills for the wood tomorrow morning. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. You know, the whole aspect of your daily routine is changed. It's gone. You're not looking at, well, when am I going to get fed today?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you were still together?
Yes, we split up into various groups. Because, as I say, there were 5 camps involved. The officers were in this particular camp, in Camp 5, and the different people you hadn't seen for 2 and 3 years, they suddenly appeared on the screen. Yeah. And they were chatting away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, unfortunately, you were looking for people that weren't there. And the greatest thing that was me was... particular friend of mine. Morris, Des Morris, I said, no, I said he didn't make it then. And about the chappy Len Bishop that lived in my road prior to the battle, he got killed. And the thing I was dreading was to see their mothers. But there again, it was, we stayed there for 3 days. And then they flew us over to Japan.
Fenwick Church, end of reel 5. Fenwick Church, reel 6. So lots of catching up to do, having come back together
with
the survivors.
Yeah.
Finding out who wasn't there anymore.
No. Glad to see that the colonel survived it, because we thought with his bad things, if you want to call it bad things that he did to influence, wasn't bad things. And knowing the treatment that he had received, I mean, in the box and things like that.
What did he think of Colonel?
Brilliant man.
He
was what I would call an English gentleman, an officer. He spoke to you, and he did at one time during the battle ask to withdraw, and he told him how many Chinese estimate it was coming before him, and he was told by the brigadier he had spots before his eyes and he wanted permission to withdraw from the battle, and they wouldn't let him. But I, God rest his soul, I met him several times, and I always treated him with the respect that he deserved. Yeah.
Did you see much of him in the camp at
first? Only in the very, very beginning. As I said, they took all the officers away, And because of his bad influence, he was put into solitary confinement for 18 months, where he carved his stone cross. Yes.
So, what can you remember in those early days in the camp? What did he do? Did he talk to you every morning? Or, you know?
He would walk through and chat and stop and ask a